Good morning. You're certainly glad to see those that are in attendance with us this morning and want to welcome those that are visiting. And to say that y'all are honored guests, and we ask for you to, if you're ever in the area again, to stop by and visit us. And those that are in attendance that are always here, we're certainly glad that you're here as well. For those that are going to Arkansas camp, I wish you the best of luck. I just got done working with Jacob. Y'all know Jacob Merrick. And I just got done working with him as a counselor in my cabin. And I just want to make sure that y'all give him all kinds of fits when you go down there this week. He didn't have enough this past week. I taught this lesson 7 years ago in this very building. And not long after I first got here. And I wanted to do it again. I'd done some work on it and refreshed it and reworked it here and there. And I wanted to redo it and re-present it to the congregation here once again. And especially to one of my, as I would say, my favorite fans. She always wanted to hear this again. And so we're going to listen to it again, Miss Pat. We're going to talk about Joseph and David and the temptations that they faced this morning. And because of the passages are so long, if you want to write them down, in Genesis chapter 39, verses 1 through 20, and then in 2 Samuel chapter 11, they're rather lengthy and we don't have time to read those particular verses this morning. And if you want to go back and do that on your own time, they're there for you to do so. But these are stories, if you recall, are about two young men. I believe that were facing some serious temptations in their lives. These are stories about people that are just like you and me, who are concerned with serving God and serving others here as we live here on this earth. They're stories about people just like you and me who are concerned about being faithful to the best of our abilities in our daily affairs of life. And yet find themselves in situations where they're pressured to do otherwise. I also believe these stories are strikingly similar in many ways. But they're also fundamentally different. Both of these ideas, as you'll see this morning, offer some very important insight into the ongoing battle that we have with Satan. And as well to do with the ongoing battle of temptation in our faith, in our resolve to remain faithful unto our Lord under any circumstance. And you may be scratching your head and you may be wondering, well, how, John, are these stories similar? I'm glad you ask. And I believe that there are five ways that are very clear to see. And we're going to look at those this morning. First of all, you might want to take note that both of these men are spiritual. We certainly see this in Joseph at this very difficult time in his life. And you just stop and think all that he had to endure as a young lad. He had grown up in a dysfunctional family. I mean, you go back to Genesis and you learn about the names and you read about the meaning of those names that Sarah had called them. And you stop and think about how his brothers had plotted to kill him until young Reuben had stopped that. And they ended up selling him to a Mennonite traders, which took him to Egypt. There in a far away from home, alone, afraid, unknown of what the circumstances may be ahead of him, he's turned to a slave in Potiphar's house. And thinking about that would have been very easy, wouldn't it? To blame God for his predicament. We see a lot of that today, don't we? Well, why did God allow this to happen to me? Why did God do this? And why, God? Why, God? And to use that perceived neglect that he had as an excuse for him to turn from God. We see that happen all the time, don't we? We see Christians who have strong faith, and when circumstances come along their way and they can't handle those circumstances and the temptation's too much for them to bear, life is just too hard to handle, they turn to the question and they ask, why, God? And they turn their backs on God most of the time, don't they? But Joseph, yet when propositioned from Potiphar's wife, isn't it so that Joseph's love for God and his commitment to serve Him evidences itself in a powerful way? Genesis chapter 39 and verse 9. There Joseph said, "There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" There is just no doubt that Joseph is a deeply spiritual man. He has resolved to stand faithful, doesn't he? As we see there in 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 5, he's watchful, as Paul says. He stands fast in the faith. He's brave. He's strong. And he doesn't cave to the peer pressures of Potiphar's wife, doesn't he? Isn't it so that David is also a man that is devoted to God? The Scriptures call him a man after God's own heart in 1 Samuel chapter 13 and verse 14. This is a man who will not take the life of his enemy Saul, because he was anointed king in 1 Samuel chapter 24 and verse 6. David knew that it wasn't right. It wasn't in his power to do so. God had anointed Saul to be king. And even though Saul had ruined that by not obeying God and killing all the Amalekites, and then saying and blaming it on the people, well, they're the ones that wanted the spoils of the land. They're the ones that wanted to do this. Saul knew better. Saul had heard the commands from Samuel, given by God, to kill, to utterly destroy all the Amalekites. That was his order. That was his job, and he didn't do it. And so God was very displeased with him, wasn't he? And he took that kingship from him. And Saul became jealous after finding out that it was going to be David that was going to be in reign next. And became furious, became angry. And he chased David all around the countryside. And many times David had the opportunity to take his life. But he didn't do it. And along with that, David wanted to build a house for the Lord in Jerusalem in 2 Samuel chapter 7. I mean, when you read those passages, David is described that he longed for in his heart to complete this task. And what made David feel this way is because David himself lived in a house, and the Lord was still living in a tent. The Lord, David knew, deserved better. Like Joseph, David too was a spiritual man. Now you're probably thinking to yourself and asking, well, what's the point? We know this. We know this, and I know that you do, but here's the point. And the point is that we can't attribute the different outcomes to the basis of character of these men involved. I mean, it's not as Joseph was a godly man while David was just outright evil and sinning all the time. We can agree that both men were good men. Both were righteous men. Both were men trying to serve the Lord and trying to serve their fellow man. And this ought to send a warning to us all. Being a godly person may help us avoid some temptations. But the truth of the matter, it doesn't make us immune to temptations, does it? All of us must fight the battle with temptation. We need to be realistic about that. And we need to be ready for the challenge when it arises. Let me ask you this morning, where is your armor at? Where is your armor at when you walk outside the doors of your house and you go into the world? Is it in the closet? Is it kicked under the bed? Is it in the trunk of your car? Your armor is important. It helps you fight the battles against the devil. And every piece is important. Without every piece, you stand to fail. Without every piece, your armor is weakened. Your armor helps you fight the battles. It helps you fight the battles as an individual Christian, but it also helps you fight the battles as a soldier in the Lord's army. It identifies who you are. Do you realize that? It identifies that you are an army of the Lord. And when you're failing in some point in your life, other soldiers that are in the army will come to your aid. Secondly, this morning, both of these men are strong. There's no doubt that Joseph's strength was clearly demonstrated in this story. You stop and consider the kind of strength it took to resist the temptation, in essence. You have a woman here, she's offering herself to a young man. And please keep in mind, as a young man, Joseph would be possessed with the same desires as any young man in his time and our time today would have. You chew on that for a moment. It wasn't like this was a one-time thing. She didn't get what she wanted, and so Potiphar's wife quit. She quit making those advances. No, the Bible says day by day she came at Joseph. She was relentless with him. And I can picture a woman in her wanting and her desires doing anything and everything that she could. Maybe she wore her best attire. Maybe she had her hair done just right. Maybe she had her makeup on just right. Maybe she, as her maids were getting her fixed up and made her beautiful looking, they were talking, "Oh, look at Joseph. I want him so bad." And her perfumes were at the highest smell, begging and vying for attention of this young man. And Joseph is not buying it at all, is he? He's not buying it at all. That takes strength. That takes courage, doesn't it? But David, on the other hand, also demonstrated great strength on many occasions in his life as well. And I think about his faith as a younger man. When he went toe-to-toe with the Philistine giant. Do you remember that story? Of course we all remember that story, don't we? David comes to camp to see his brothers and his other countrymen by order of his dad to take them some food. And he hears the stories when he enters camp, doesn't he? Being told of this giant. He sees the fear of his countrymen. He sees the fear of his own brothers as this giant ridicules them day in and day out for 40 days. Did David cower down and become afraid like the rest of them? No. He becomes angry. He becomes furious, as we see in 1 Samuel chapter 17 in verse 26. He asked, "Who is this guy I think he is? Who does this giant think he is?" He's talking about my friends in such a way. He's talking about my God in such a way. How dare he do such a thing? And may I suggest that those are more than mere words. There was some action behind them, weren't they? David was so committed that he put his life on the line, having the faith the whole time that God was going to be able to deliver him and give him the victory over this giant. And this reality eliminates another possibility of explanation for why these two stories came out so differently. You can't explain David's failure by saying that he was a spiritual weakling, while Joseph was a man of great spiritual strength. They were both faithfully strong. Both had an understanding who God was, and that God would deliver them from their times of temptation, that God would be on their side. Once again, we find another important lesson for us. And that is, not only do the strong face temptation, but sometimes we cave in, don't we? We fail, don't we? And we do at times succumb to the things that present themselves to us. In fact, it's when we're strong, isn't it, that we're the most vulnerable. It's when we think we're above being taken by some temptation that we're that we're most susceptible to it. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 12, therefore, let him who thinks he's strong take heed lest he fall. Pride goes before the fall is what the wise man says. We must not let our guard down. We must not let pride get in the way and say to ourselves, well, you know what? I can handle this. I can handle hanging out with that group of friends that aren't doing things that my mom and dad told me to do. Or I can handle the co-worker that says, yes, we can fudge on our taxes just a little bit. Or yes, I can do this or I can do that without being caught in the way of sin. How many times do we think that we can do that without falling? Not many times. Both men faced similar temptations. Both were tempted to become involved in illicit sexual relationships. And we can't dismiss David's failure by arguing that his temptation was greater than Joseph's. I believe they were fundamentally the same. In fact, if you want to argue which one was more difficult to spot than the other, Joseph wins that one. And yet Joseph's the one that did the right thing. Sometimes we try to explain and we try to reason, don't we, away our failures at the moment of temptation by saying the temptation was just more than I could handle. It was just more than I could bear. It was just more, it's more than I wanted to see and do. Until we fall. Until we sin. We must realize, we have to realize, that this is an indictment of God. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13, God does not permit it. He says, no temptation has overtaken you except such temptation is common to man. God is going to be there, it says. God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able. But with the temptation will also make a way of escape that you may be able to bear it. Consequently, when we cave, it's our choice. It's what we want to do, ultimately. I wanted to do that. I wanted to have that fun. I wanted to have whatever it may be. I was selfish and I wanted to sin. We can't claim that the temptation was too great to bear. When you look over in James chapter 1, when you look over in James chapter 1, it's a telling tale, isn't it? James puts it in perspective of really what it's all about. In James chapter 1 and verse 13, let no one say when he is tempted, I'm tempted of God. God doesn't tempt us. It's the devil. For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does He Himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. And then when that desire is conceived, it brings birth to sin, and sin, when it is full grown, it brings forth death. Do not be deceived, James says. It's what we want to do. Period. Fourthly, I believe both men were initially innocent. There is certainly no indication that Joseph invited the advances made by Potiphar's wife. In fact, he resisted him, didn't he? He was nothing more than an innocent victim here, I believe. But looking at David, he too was initially innocent as well. There's no indication that David was looking for trouble when he went for a walk on that rooftop that evening. This glimpse of Bathsheba bathing was just one of those accidents that sometimes happens. Sometimes we are at the wrong place at the wrong time. But to cast doubt over David's behavior that the Scripture does not mention robs this story of a powerful application. Here you have two men that are completely innocent in conduct. Yet because of the circumstances they find themselves in, suddenly in tempting situations that can carry some serious and potential consequences. Their souls are on the line. Their lives are in jeopardy. And here's the truth of the matter. As Christians, we've got to wake up. We've got to pay attention to the warning signs. We never know when or where we'll suddenly be thrown into a tempting situation where we must quickly make a decision. And that may have some serious consequences. Please pay attention to the word quickly. The word quickly has some resolve, doesn't it? It has a word, a meaning of being spontaneous. It's the idea of now, not later. It is a word that means that we're not going to think and ponder on something. It carries the idea that I mean yes and no immediately. And a lot of times that's where we fall, isn't it? We don't make the quick decisions that are needed to keep us out of trouble. We stay right there on the edge of sin. And we look at it, and we ponder on it, and we wonder just how much fun that will be. Or we think, as little kids often do, as they're reaching out to put their hand in that electrical socket, well, I wonder just what that might do. How far can I get before Mom or Dad is going to stop me? Oftentimes, that's exactly what we do. How far can I stretch the limits before I fall? How far am I willing to take my soul on a joyride? Finally, isn't it so that both men had a way out? It's not like this was forced upon them. It's not like they were kidnapped, and we know the results of those kinds of things. They weren't held at gunpoint or anything like that. There was a way of escape. Actually, David's options were limited. It's not like that he could just pack up and seek other employment. It's not like he could pack up his stuff and go back home. He may have had some freedoms and he may have had some responsibilities and some liberties as being a slave in Potiphar's house. But basically, he was still a slave. And running away was all that he could do. And he used that way of escape that was given to him, didn't he? And thinking about that escape, the truth of the matter is David had even more options. I mean, he's the king after all. And along his road to disaster, David had the opportunities on countless occasions to stop the train wreck. On the very onset, he could have looked away. He could have gone back into his house and forgot the whole situation. But after looking too long, he could have refused to inquire who she was. No, it really doesn't matter what her name is. But after finding that out and even learning that Bathsheba was married, he could have stopped there. He could have drawn the line in the sand. But he didn't. He wasn't making those quick decisions, was he? He was wanting more and more, wasn't he? And at every opportunity he did, what did he do? David chose to reject his way of escape. He wanted to do things his way. And it cost him more than he was willing to bargain for, didn't it? I may say that like these men, we always have a way of escape. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be easy. It's going to be hard. It's going to be burdensome. Given the opportunity before him, I don't think it would have been easy for David to look away. We certainly see that today, don't we, in modest dress? Because why? Because it catches the eye, doesn't it? We understand that concept. What about online pornography? It's easy, isn't it? It's not like we could get caught back in the old days. Our car would be in front of the bookstore and people would know that we were there. We can look at things with the click of a button in the privacy of our own homes and no one will ever know. The devil makes it easy, doesn't it? Getting back to the point, the way of escape is always there. It's always there if we're willing to use it. And of course that means when we cave into temptation, isn't that because the sin was too great for us to bear? It's because we rejected the way out. We wanted to do things. We chose to rebel. We chose to sin. Period. The situations are so similar. They were spiritual men. They were strong men. Both were initially innocent. Both facing similar temptations. Both had a way out. So let me ask you, why didn't these stories end the same way? I believe the answer to that is found in the difference between the two stories. And you ask how these stories are different. Each man responded to his crisis in a different way, didn't he? Joseph ran away. He removed himself from the situation. He made that decision and he stuck with that decision. And he didn't allow himself to remain in a setting where he had the opportunity to sin. He stated the fact, how can I do this? How can I commit this sin? He knew it was wrong. He knew that if he stood on the edge and faced Potiphar's wife and all the advances, and he kept looking and kept begging for her and listening to all her wants and her needs and her wishes, he may have failed. He might have failed. But he didn't do that. He said, how can I do this and sin against my God? And he left. He ran away. David, on the other hand, David chose to stay. And what followed that decision was a series of seemingly small steps that led to disaster. It started with his mind looking and lusting, and then inquiring who she was, and then sending for her, then adultery, then the cover-up, then the murder. And at times sin looks appealing, and then we take a bite, and it's really not all that great, isn't it? It's not really all the fun that we thought it was going to be. Sometimes it's very bitter, and I believe that's exactly how David felt. The bitter taste of sin. The reality that sin is hard and it's cruel. And honestly, now we have to realize that David's problem didn't begin on the battlefield of Rabbah or in the bedroom of that palace. His problem began on the rooftop in Jerusalem in a simple fatal decision to stay on that rooftop. We need to carefully examine how we manage our moment of crisis. Sometimes our path to destructive behavior begins with a simple choice, just to simply stick around. We don't remove ourselves from the tempting situations. We stick around. We lurk on the edges. We peek around the corner. We walk just close enough on the wrong side of the tracks until we're drawn in. We think we can handle it. We think we got it under control. Nothing is going to happen to me. That's what we say to ourselves, isn't it? I got this. I hate that phrase. I got this. Because oftentimes, we don't. But in time, maybe not today, or tomorrow, or next week, or even in the next year, but in time, we will be pulled in. We will fall. And then there's those the thing that can strike up a conversation with someone at their work or their neighbor, and before you know it, because you think you're strong, almost unexpectedly we're caught up in adultery and all the disastrous consequences that come with that dreadful choice. Where did all this trouble begin? I believe it starts with a simple choice to stay rather than to run away.
If we want to win our battles with temptation and avoid catastrophic consequences that come with sin, we've got to learn to run away just like Joseph. Sometimes we do have to stand firm in the faith, and we do have to battle our battles. Sometimes we have to battle our battles alone, and sometimes we're going to have to battle those battles with our fellow soldiers in the army of the Lord. But sometimes we've got to learn to hang the white flag and give up and run away. That's where the quick decisions of mind need to work their best. What we do at the moment of crisis is very critical. Critical enough to say, will I remain faithful and go to heaven? Or will I stay, or will I sin and have the possibility of losing my soul? There are important lessons for us to learn from these two men. The most important being the battle we wage against the devil. And the question that is asked is the same. Are you winning the battle that he's waging against your soul right now? Maybe you are. Have the faith and the strength to battle those battles and look at that and say, you know what? How can I do this and sin against my God? Maybe you've been more like David and gave in and caved in to the circumstances and to the pleasures of this world. You have some sin in your life that you need to get rid of. Maybe you need to be baptized for the remission of your sins. Whatever the case may be, may you come forward as we stand and sing the invitation song.